Hello, this is Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, and today we'll be mapping epigenetic methylation on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with Dr. Kara Fitzgerald. Kara Fitzgerald, ND, completed postdoctorate training in nutritional biochemistry and laboratory science under the direction of Richard Lord, PhD at Metametrics Laboratory. She authored and edited case studies in integrative and functional medicine and was a contributing author to laboratory evaluations for integrative and functional medicine, the Institute for Functional Medicine's textbook for functional medicine, and co-authored the ebook, The Methylation Diet and Lifestyle. She has been published in numerous peer-reviewed journals, blogs, and podcasts regularly for professionals and consumers. Dr. Fitzgerald is on faculty at the Institute for Functional Medicine and maintains a functional medicine practice in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. You're going to love this conversation with Dr. Fitzgerald, where we really talk about the three tiers to epigenetic mastery. Welcome, Kara. I'm thrilled to finally be speaking with you.
Yeah, likewise, Andrea. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Talking about excitement, Kara, I have to say I'm super excited to talk about the coupling of these two words, epigenetics and methylation. I think they're two things that we tend to think of separately. There's a lot of focus these days on epigenetics, diet and lifestyle modification, and of course, a lot of focus on methylation and the genetics of methylation. But one thing that you talk about so beautifully is that methylation is happening in every cell in the body all the time, and that methylation itself is an epigenetic regulator. It's actually directly altering the expression of genes. So can you set the context with what you mean by epigenetic methylation?
There are a number of different ways that we alter the expression of the genome with epigenetic modifications. But the one that's been best researched and perhaps is the most significant is epigenetic methylation. So that is the placement or the removal of methylation groups on different genes to allow for the expression. So when there are no methylation marks, when the methylation marks are removed or not added, the gene is on and expressing. Or conversely, when there are methylation marks in general, that means the gene's inhibited. There are millions of them, and they're major players in genetic regulation.
When it comes to epigenetic methylation, if we're thinking about the importance of methylation, are there important triggers and mediators?
Real-time altering of the epigenetic methylation can happen really with virtually the engagement in the experience of life. When we're thinking about negatively regulating it or altering it, increasing our risk of the chronic diseases we see so often in practice, we can cast a wide net here, Andrea. We can think about gut health. We can, of course, think about nutrition status. We can think about lifestyle habits. Are we exercising? Are we under undue stress? We can think about our community and our relationships. We can think about conditions that result in methyl donor drain, allergies for one. We metabolize histamine with methyl donors, or when we're detoxing, we can use methyl donors, et cetera, or certain medications, even supplements, can alter the availability of those precious methyl donors. So those would be potential triggers for augmenting. This needs to be underlined. Toxins, of course,
environmental toxins
of all shapes and sizes and flavors are strong influence on our epigenetic expression. So those we can think about as triggering events. And then things that are going to mediate are continued exposure to any of the triggers. I mean, oftentimes I find triggers sort of fit into mediators if we're still exposed to them. Are we still eating that pro-inflammatory lousy diet? Are we still eating those foods we're sensitive to? Is our microbiome in continued continued distress? Is our lifestyle imbalanced? Are we still being exposed to the mycotoxins, or we've got a mouthful of amalgam, and you know, so on and so forth. Those then become our real-time mediators. Sleep, incidentally.
Right.
Good sleep, bad sleep is going to augment epigenetic methylation patterns favorably or not, depending. And it doesn't take much. I guess that's the thing that's really remarkable. It doesn't take a lifetime of bad sleep to throw off the epigenome. I mean, there is research out there just really showing one night of poor sleep. And a funny anecdote, I was actually lecturing on this in Ireland when I was up there delirious with jet lag. It just dawned on me how I was altering my epigenetic expression with this intense experience of fatigue.
It's so interesting as you're talking, Kara, how much we get focused on detoxification or the certain methyl donors, the B vitamins, the choline, and that it really is the epigenome, as you're talking about. It's the entire thing. It's everything that we're doing. This is what I call the three tiers of epigenetic mastery in the functional nutrition lab world, that there is tier one work we have to do, that we do need to sleep, that the gut needs to be functional, need to be exercising. And a lot of practitioners, even in the functional medicine world, are skipping over to what I call the tier three work, dismantling the dysfunction, ignoring this piece.
And it's huge.
It's huge.
You can't underscore it. In fact, there's really interesting research on exercise. You want to be in the sweet spot. If you're a sedentary individual and you immediately go into CrossFit, that's not a beneficial form of exercise for you at that time in your level of fitness. And the other piece, and the really important piece, and really kind of a piece of the story that drew me to this so strongly, is pushing methylation forward. So attempting to tweak biochemically by providing lots of methyl donors is not necessarily what we want to do at all, because we want expression of certain genes. We don't want to promote imbalanced methylation with an overabundance or pushing methylation forward. And that's really one of the hypotheses we are sitting with strongly and wondering about. But to back up a little bit, we want to think about nuancing methylation expression. So this casting this wide net is essential. But in addition to methyl donors, supplements or as food, we want to be mindful around them if we're using supplements. But there's a whole category of what we've called methylation adaptogens. And these are flavonoids that seem to augment expression in this sort of beautiful adaptogenic way. They augment the behavior of the DNA methyltransferase enzymes, supporting inhibition, so freeing expression of certain genes. Most famously, when we look at this, we're thinking about cancer. There's a lot of research into sort of differential epigenetic expression, if you will, but imbalanced epigenetic expression in cancer. So a tumor suppressor gene, I mean, they've looked at BRCA, for instance, could be hypermethylated and shut down, whereas an oncogene that's going to promote cancer can be hypomethylated and on. Cancer, it's a great example because there's so much research there, but we can look at this in the context of really any chronic disease that we're working with. We want balanced methylation expression. And understanding this, we can't simply resort to pushing methylation forward and looking for methylation lesions. We have to cast this wide net because it's balanced and it's nuanced. And that's essential, I believe, in what we're going to look at for healthy epigenetic expression.
That's amazing. I love how you're putting this. And I love some of the words that you're bringing to it. It's nuanced. And this is really when we're thinking about diet and lifestyle modification, it is nuanced. It's not going to the nth degree. Like the example you used with the exercise, we have to dial it in for the individual. This is where we get functional. Think about what's necessary there. What are some of these methylation adaptogens in particular that you were referring to?
It's such a cool area of research. It's very sexy and everybody is interested in them. When I start to list these for you, you are going to say, well, of course, because we know these botanicals and we use them in practice and we eat them and we consume them, etc. And we know they've got massive traditional use history. One of the big ones is cumin, turmeric. It has this, what appears to be a real methylation adaptogenic potential, like really kind of nuancing and allowing the expression of tumor suppressor genes in a case where maybe they weren't before. Turmeric, probably this is its potent mechanism. I know there's multiple mechanisms involved in turmeric, but I would imagine, I suspect that as research unfolds, we're going to see that this is a big deal. What else? One of my favorites, rosemary. rosmarinic acid in rosemary. Mm-hmm. I put rosemary on almost everything, and I just love this rosmarinic acid. Sulforaphane, diindolmethane, quercetin, resveratrol, EGCG. Mm-hmm. These are all what we're calling methylation adaptogens, but they augment the expression of DNA and methyltransferase.
And we have a great podcast with Tom Moltair on sulforaphane, so that's a fun one to leap to from here. When we think about the epigenetic methylation and we look at the central part of the functional nutrition matrix or the soup, how do the chemical messengers, either inflammatory cytokines or hormone and neurotransmitters, how do those impact the expression of the methylation processes?
Yeah,
especially,
that's a good question.
Yeah, in terms of like what you were talking about with the toxins, I'm thinking about the endogenous toxins. What happens there?
It's somewhat intuitive. So a good example would be inflammation, chronic inflammation from poor diet, et cetera. There's research out on it inhibiting NRF2, so shutting down the main regulator of NF-kappa-B. And you can see a hypomethylation of NF-kappa-B in certain research. So you can see the epigenetic modulation of the genes involved in generating inflammation. It's almost like inflammation begets inflammation,
right?
You know, regardless of the origin source. We know reactive oxygen species and toxins, again, can directly go in there and damage the epigenome. Not only can they trigger cascades of inflammatory compounds that can alter the epigenome, they're able to damage it itself, just like they damage DNA.
So we start to see that it's really the entire picture. It is the web of interactions. We can't just think of methylation as one node or detoxification as one node that we're working on.
Yes.
It really is how everything interacts. It's the whole picture. In your clinic and working with people or in the research that you've been involved in, if we look at the right side, what I call the skills or the core basics of the functional nutrition matrix, have there been any really interesting findings in relation to our diet and lifestyle modification practices with methylation?
Well, let me tell you something really, really cool. Our study is unique. There's no study out there of its kind that I'm aware of where we're using a very careful methyl donor and methyl adaptogen rich diet. We're suggesting intermittent fasting. It's not a must, but we're giving them some suggestions. We want them to track their sleep. We have a meditation protocol that following, and we have an exercise component. So we're casting a wide net here. Steve Horvath out of UCLA has devised something called the epigenetic clock. In fact, actually, there's a few different clocks that kind of give insight into different areas of epigenetic expression, and they're associated with longevity, morbidity, mortality. I mean, they're really remarkable, and they're being shown to be the most robust and useful tools as far as the whole aging process goes. They're incredibly potent. I mean, we think about, we've been trained on telomeres, but the epigenetic clock's reliability is surpassing analyzing telomere length. Our study, one of our areas of investigation is we're arguing that our protocol is going to alter epigenetic clock expression and improve longevity. So that's one of the areas that we really want to look at and that I'm incredibly excited about. There's some early research to suggest it's possible. Certainly adopting a general healthy lifestyle. They've looked at Women's Health Initiative data pools and things of that nature and have found, obviously, that people who don't smoke, that people who eat more vegetables, et cetera, do appear to have a healthier epigenetic clock and more robust health span in addition to longevity. So we're saying if we go in there with this very dialed in approach where we're really looking at augmenting the methylome, as it's called, we're going to see some favorable outcome in longevity and health span.
I love it. This is amazing, Kara. I'm so excited to have this conversation. I love the intersection of our work. I love the unification of these words, epigenetic methylation, methylation adaptogens. They say it all. They say everything you need to know. Is there any final note in looking at the functional nutrition matrix that kind of pops out at you in regards to epigenetic methylation?
Overall, it's this big balanced upstream. If you want the most bang for your buck, you have to cast this wide net. And we need to let go of being a little bit too myopic. There's a place for that. There's definitely a place for looking at biochemistry I am all about biomarkers. I have a background in laboratory science. We're doing a lot of labs in this particular study, but it's this big picture that's so essential. So really, Andrea, it's honoring the whole matrix. And so one of the great things, if there's anybody listening to this podcast and they're thinking, man, this is Greek to me. If you're practicing functional medicine, if you're listening to this podcast and you're either a recipient of functional medicine and you're bringing those principles into your life and into your family's life, or if you're a clinician or a practitioner bringing it into the world in other ways, if you rely on the matrix, if you lean on the matrix to guide you in your patient care and in your self-care, you are already working on optimizing epigenetic expression.
Brilliant. I love it. Thank you so much, Kara.
My pleasure.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com, and we can always notify you when a new podcast episode is ready. You can just go to 15minutematrix.com/notify, let us know your name and your email, and we'll be sure to drop into your inbox with that reminder. You also have an open invitation to email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us anytime at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.